This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. In the waning moments of the 2015 legislative session, Republicans pushed through a bill that was mainly about campaign finance issues. But tacked right there at the end of that bill was a provision that bans any public body or most public officials from using public funds to spread factual information about local ballot measures in the 60-day run-up to an election. And that includes votes to increase funding for local school districts or mental health services, to approve lease agreements or restructure local governments. Well, officials from cities and townships immediately cried foul, saying the measure amounts to a gag order on them. Last week, a group of local officials filed a federal lawsuit. They say this new law, Public Act 269, violates constitutional rights. The state of Michigan and Secretary of State Ruth Johnson are named as defendants. Dearborn Mayor Jack O'Reilly is the board president of the Michigan Municipal League, which has been highly critical of this law. Mayor O'Reilly, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, I'm happy to be with you. Thank you.
You have been very upfront in saying that this was a political thing that never should have happened. Tell us why.
First of all, when you were describing how they got there, they really violated their own rules. In October, they introduced a bill in the Senate, and that bill in the Senate was intended to deal with commingling of funds. Basically, for example, labor unions or other groups had collected funds for a certain purpose. They couldn't be diverted and commingled with campaign funds and so on. There was really no big resistance, so it had hearings in the Senate, went through the process, was passed by the Senate, went over to the House. The House had hearings in the House. Then they put it on reading. They had first reading, second reading, and it was ready to go. So that's the original bill. It was about 12 pages long, and it had a lot of support from business leaders and chambers of commerce and so on, and it was really not that controversial. So that's the bill that night. So in the last day of session, in the last hours of the session, they had a private caucus in the House of Representatives where only the Republicans were there, and they said, we're going to run this bill, but we're changing it, and it's now going to become a 53-page bill. And it's going to be different. They never had the bill printed, so nobody had a copy of it at that thing. So they do this in a private caucus. They come back out on the floor, and they run the bill through on third reading and modify it, and then they pass it. It goes over to the Senate. Now, under the rules, any bill that is modified by the other chamber after it's passed by one chamber has to wait one day before they can take it up. But they decide to waive that rule. Now, nobody has seen it or read it. So the senators then voted on it, and of course it went on party line. But here's the kicker. Even the media that were there, the press representatives, couldn't get copies of the bill the night it was passed because there were none. So there was nobody who could actually say they had read that bill. And the next day, Republican legislators who had been contacted by their local jurisdictions actually admitted in public, and it's printed in many papers in the state, that they didn't know what they were voting on, and they actually, that next day, asked the governor to either veto it or guarantee that they'll come back and create a fix. Now, with that history, you know this is a bill that shouldn't have happened. But here's the worst part. The process that should have happened would mean that there would have been hearings, there would have been explanations of intent, there would have been a base for looking at it. And here's the other thing. Usually, two things happen. There's a financial analysis of every bill, and the chamber that initiates it always also has an explanation of the bill that's provided. That's in addition to, and I go online all the time and look at bills that way.
Mm-hmm.
This never had that, so there's no one ever got to see it, but if it went to court, the problem you have is, without hearings and without vetting it, nobody knows what the intent was. And this is the issue. To me, when legislation is passed, one of the things that happens is, if it's challenged, the courts go back to those committee hearings. They go back to the legislative analysis as a source for determining what the intent was.
But in this case, it's not there.
There isn't anything. So they would be starting from scratch with no guidance on interpreting what the intent of the legislature was. And we have legislators who went public the next day saying they didn't have any intent because they didn't even know what the bill did. This is not the way government should be carried out.
And we have Governor Snyder, who did go ahead and sign the measure and then immediately asked the legislature to go back and fix it.
Yeah. And how do you fix something that has no shape and form? In other words, because we don't know what the intent was, because we don't know how to interpret the language of it, it isn't a fix. it should be start over and let's talk about it. And part of this is because they're fixing a problem that we haven't experienced much problem with this issue. And that's the Secretary of State has been enforcing. She's taken action against some local entities that were behaving wrongly and held them accountable for it, but it's been a very small number. So this is a very heavy-handed solution to something that we have no evidence is a widespread problem.
Help us understand, right there on the ground level in your city, in Dearborn, if this law stands, how will it change the way in your city you'll be able to disseminate information about local ballot proposals?
Well, again, because we don't know exactly what the intent is, this is a very broadly written bill. So it says that no public money or sources or staffing or anything can engage in discussing ballot questions of any kind 60 days before the election. Now, most of us have, for example, televised council meetings, right? And in our council meetings, the public can come up and raise any issue and ask questions and whatever. In this reading, I have to say, you know, the interpretation would be that we could not do that, or we'd be violating, or we'd have to shut off the cameras. I mean, it's that kind of thing where, because there's strict penalties and because it's not clear, we have to look and say they're basically saying that if in any way there are public funds that supported any venue that is going to be used. The League of Women Voters in Michigan have come out opposing it, and their thing is that they put on panels on things like this where they invite people with different opinions to come on and explain them and talk about it. But they're saying under this, nobody who is connected with the actual government or who was part of putting these ballot questions on the ballot would be eligible to be on their panels, so that source of information would be illegal. I don't think that's, you know, really a good idea. So it's a constraint only on that, but it's so broadly written that it's a misdemeanor, there's fines. So it's a question of what kind of risk are you willing to take, having no background and nothing to clarify the intent.
Tell us more about this federal lawsuit. How does it go after this gag order law?
Well, basically, we're saying that what the state has done is, in fact, violated the free speech, and it is intended to have a review to say, is this been overreaching? Is the state of Michigan violating this federal constitution because the restrictions are unnecessarily restrictive and will, in fact, interfere with free speech?
What do you feel has led to this? When you think about, as you say, this nebulous thing that was rammed through, why do you think that happened?
I believe there are some people who believe somehow that the public isn't smart enough to discern what the truth is, and so they think they're being hoodwinked into passing, you know, millages and so on. I think that's really what's behind it, which is sad, too, because then it means they have no faith in the voters. But I can't think of any other motive for that. And part of this is because oftentimes, okay, it's the idea of it's about money. But so many ballot questions aren't about money. When we went into the recession, we actually had a charter commission that was in play where they were reviewing our whole commission here in Dearborn. And so we had a bunch of things in the charter which created a burden in terms of administration because they named all these different departments we would have and so on. So the Charter Commission, which was independently elected, remember, Charter Commissions are elected just to do the charter revision. So these elected people who were elected just for this purpose looked at everything and said, well, wait, we don't need all that. That's cumbersome. And so they defined the activities that should be carried out. What should the city provide in services, but not the manner? That allowed us to reduce by compressing. So we shortened the number of departments, which cut the overhead without cutting services. So it was a cost savings benefit without hurting services, and it had to be done through a vote for the charter. So that wouldn't have been available to us because how would we have explained what we were doing and how would we have carried that out? That's why I'm saying this is so heavy-handed, and there's no evidence that there has been any really significant problem that they're fixing.
We know times of the essence. There's more than 100 school districts and local governments that have issues on the March 8th ballot.
Yeah.
Have you been given any idea of a timetable for action on this lawsuit?
No, we're hoping it'll be soon. And the judge obviously understands that many of these are already under the constraints, and they've had these planned for some time. They've been working on them, and so they're managing this. And without much guidance, I mean, it's really hard because since we don't know where the line is clearly drawn, We don't have one. I feel very lucky we don't. But those that do have no real way of knowing when they're stepping over the line. When are they actually violating? It's just there's no real evidence. There's no real content because they bifurcated the process. They didn't follow their own legal process for promulgating the law, and therefore we have a law that nobody can safely say where the parameters are.
Dearborn Mayor Jack O'Reilly is the president of the Michigan Municipal League. Several league members are among the 18 plaintiffs in a federal suit that was filed recently in Detroit seeking to block Public Act 269. Mayor O'Reilly, it was great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Stateside reached out to Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekhoff requesting an interview. His office declined our request.